Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, there, lads, it's the weekend then, and it's your usual mix of looking back, looking forward, and a couple of features in between. And a couple of features in between this week are Rory Smith from the New York Times talking to Neil Atkinson about the whole Messi situation. Who's going to buy him? Where's he going to go? Is he going to stay at Barca? What's the crack? You get all of that from Rory. And then we've got Jordan Jarrett-Bryan talking about Arsenal and talking about the Charity Shield, and we'll be talking about that later. But first off, I'm going to talk to the panel, which is Lizzie Doyle, which is Ian Ryan, which is Kiefer O'Neill, and which is Damien Kavanagh, who I can't see on my screen, but he is there somewhere. So we're going to chat first. I'll start with you, Ian, just what you've made of the pre-season friendlies, what sort of has come out of that for you, where you think Liverpool are at right now, really, because... Arsenal obviously won the FA Cup, which is why we're playing them. They've looked a little bit better under Arteta and things like that. Liverpool, it's quite hard, isn't it, really, to say where they're at because, we won the league and then we had those strange performances sort of thing after winning the league. And then now it's officially pre-season, even though it feels like the other season didn't stop. It's all very strange and very odd and very hard to assess, isn't it?
I think that's really fair, mate, because it's a really small sample size, isn't it, in terms of games and stuff. And by now, well, obviously by now the season's normally started, but normally pre-season you're getting to watch Liverpool, maybe seven, even eight times. I've not even really seen anyone else playing pre-season friendlies, to be honest. I saw a little bit of Chris Wilder on Sky before saying they tried to play one and it got called off at half-time, do you know what I mean? So I think there's a real lack of games. So I think... For Jurgen Klopp, I think he will just have appreciated having his players, pretty much all of them, together. Obviously, there's a couple of injuries in there, so we know people like Henderson and Trent aren't available, but he does get the front three together for the first time in a while. I think it was last year where Mane starts against Norwich on the bench because he comes back late. So I think, whilst it not being perfect, it's not a million miles away from what Jurgen would want in terms of he's got most of the group together. He hasn't had to do anything in terms of long journeys, which obviously normally for commercial reasons, the club are flying all over the place and we get why they do that. But this time, he's had them in Austria for a long period of time. It looks like they've been going fairly heavy on the training to supplement the games. I think one of the key things about the game against Red Bull was that I think Liverpool had trained pretty intensively in and around that match. And I think you could see, I think Jürgen's comments were something like, I put the lads through the paces and you could see some really tired legs in that game. And I think that comes across, certainly first half, it looked like some of them were running in treacle. But I think, against Stuttgart, it was fairly comprehensive. Robbo was fairly composed. It was 3-0. It was comfortable. I thought, I did the pink after the game and I thought there was a huge gulf in class. And I think they were actually ahead of us in terms of their prep as well. But we look far the superior team. And I think there was loads of positives in that game. I think obviously the big positive from the second game was the two goals from Rian Brewster. And I think there's been a lot of chat about what's next for the kid. I found myself maybe to and fro a little bit because I think you can make strong cases for him maybe going away and getting some game time with another team where he's playing pretty much all the time. And there was a link with Sheffield United I saw yesterday. But also I think you could say actually, if he's in and around this squad of players, there could be a huge benefit just from training with the lads that he's with, you know what I mean, in terms of the standard that we've got at the club. I mean, that's a huge learning curve for anyone. So I can kind of see the argument where keeping him around wouldn't be a bad thing and giving him maybe, you know, last 15s, last 20s. And I think he's something a little bit different that we haven't got as well in terms of finishing. He doesn't operate quite like the other three, but I think there's something very different about Rhian Brewster in terms of his attributes. So I wouldn't be against keeping him at the club next season, Robbo, and just bringing the loan off and obviously letting him kind of be himself with the group of players that we've got.
Yeah, Kiefer, I think the thing with Brewster is he looks a very natural goal scorer, doesn't he? I think it was interesting, did something with Fowler the other week and with scoring, because obviously you do when you speak to God. And I was talking to him about Mo Salah, and he actually said, and like I sort of knew what he meant. He was like, he said, Mo's a weird one in front of goal, I think he said. And he said, I almost look at him sometimes and think he hits the ball a bit strange and things like that. And when you look at Mo's goal record, it sounds mad to say that, but I kind of know what Robbie was on about. Whereas with Brewster, he's got all that natural stuff. He's very instinctive. You know, that goal, the second one the other night, that, you know, he's got a lad coming in behind him. There's people running across. You know, when people say, you know, people who don't play footy will just go, oh, well, yeah, easy that. You'd expect them to put it in. But the placement of it, how cool he was putting it away, it was very instinctive and very natural, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm very much of Ian. I think we should keep him around next season. I don't think alone would benefit him at all, just because he's had that half a season at Swansea. I think he scored 11 goals in 22 games, which is ridiculous, really, when you think. So I think he's already above the Championship, you can sort of tell. His finishes, he just knows where the goal is, and that's what you saw last pre-season of him. And then obviously he didn't really get a chance, and then he's loaned out, and then, you know, he's showing his talent in the Championship. And, you know, that second finish in particular, just the calmness of it, and he takes everything really quickly. Like, I know what Fowler was sort of saying about Salah. He almost sort of hesitates sometimes and maybe overthinks it. You know, he scored a lot of goals. He knows where the goal is himself. But sometimes he'll take that extra touch or just wait for a second to sort of see maybe where the keepers, the defenders go. And Brewster just is like, he looks like he's going to be prolific. He seems to always know sort of where to be. He pops up at the right time in the right place. And I think he's the type of player you're looking at, and I know it's so early, but you're looking at him thinking he's the type of lad who could score hundreds of goals for Liverpool. He's only 19. He's got a long career ahead of him. And it's been one of them where, you know, everyone's been excited about him for a long time, and I think now he's starting to prove why. He had that horrible injury, didn't he? I think he was out for like 18 months, which totally, you know, pushed back his development. But he's, you know, he's been given that chance at Swansea and just absolutely flew. And now he's been given, you know, Jürgen's gave him a little bit of time in pre-season, as you would expect. And he's completely proven himself again. I think you'd probably see him feature in the Community Shield this weekend. And then I'm not sure if Liverpool will, you know, there's a lot of clubs wanting him, as you'd expect. And I think you mentioned there, Sheffield United. If he does go to a club, you'd like him to see to go somewhere like that, where, you know, the Chris Wilder will play him. If he, you know, there was sort of mentions of like Tottenham or something, he's going to go somewhere like that. He just sits on the bench, wouldn't he? So he's definitely, I'd rather him sit on the bench in Anfield and be around the setup. And, you know, I think he sort of deserves to be as well, because he probably was one of the players that would have maybe won a Premier League winners medal, wouldn't he? So, you know, maybe going forward, he'll get us another next season.
Yeah, and Damien, Kiefer mentions there that, you know, he's being linked with a lot of clubs now, which is obviously an indication of his progress. There was we sort of been here before with him when Sturridge left, though, haven't we, where, you know, it was like, OK, this is the big chance, this is the time for Brewster to step up. He got a couple of goals, and it looked like to me that a bit of nerves, a bit of tension maybe got to him. You know, and we, you know, we only ever know half the story because we don't see what goes on in training. But it did feel like maybe he didn't totally snap up that opportunity, and that's why he went out on loan. But he's got that experience now. He's coming back. When he was speaking the other night, I thought he spoke very well. Klopp as well was sort of, you know, he's all day in front of goal, but we're still working on the other stuff, the stuff outside the box and the rest of his game, really. And again, I would agree with that. I think there's still stuff from the other night that, you know, he probably could have improved on, and he'd probably be kicking himself about two great goals. But as Kiva said, you know, he's a teenage lad, and we've got to keep that in mind, haven't we?
Very much, and that's a fair point. And I think Kiva's point about the injury, you can't overlook that. That's something that did inhibit him. He's got a gift, hasn't he? He's just a natural goal scorer. He finds space in the box, and when he hits it, it's on the target. You know, and that sounds very basic, that really. But the way strikers have evolved over the last 10 years or so, we've sort of wanted him to be everything, running the channels here and there, holding it up and that. He's just one of the old school, this lad. And I absolutely accept what you're saying there is approach work is something that would, you know, he's nowhere near Liverpool standard at the moment. He's nowhere near someone who could step in for a number of games and keep up that standard. But he's absolutely got that presence in the box. And so I'm a bit torn on him, really. And I think he's the last piece of the transfer jigsaw for Liverpool this season. Because if they're going to use him regularly from the bench and be another option, then sounds, I'd keep him. But if he's not going to get that opportunity for whatever reason, you know, say they don't move Origi, they don't move the Shaq, and they're going to be much more viable options. I could see an argument of saying, well, okay, go to a club where you're going to play every week, but maybe only for the first half of the season, something like that. But this lad coming off the bench, for example, he's got a gift, and we would repent at leisure if we didn't get the best out of this lad. So, yeah, Jürgen will be looking, saying, well, this is the champions of the world. You know, if this lad wants to be the real deal, he's going to have to work a lot of his games. He's going to have to be a student of the game. But he's got all the ingredients in it. And, yeah, I do agree. He didn't really take his opportunity in the first instance. But what he showed going to Swansea and what he showed even in these just pre-season games. I mean, it's 3 goals in 2 halves, isn't it?
And yeah.
He passes the ball into the goal. He said, that's the old school. So I can see where, you know, with Fowler used to do that himself, didn't he? You know, Fowler could score all kinds of goals. But basically, it comes to him in a crowded penalty and he just go, think, put it in.
Yeah.
This lad's got it all. He's got it all. Really excited.
I think you saw that with the first goal the other night as well. Like, the you know, it was fairly close in. But you could see from the keeper's face, he just didn't expect them to get that connection at that point, hit it at that point, reach it at that point. And it was just, you know, the keeper's face was one of shock. It was just like, oh, where's that gone now? In the back of the net.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder whether you flip it on its head, what you just said, though, Damien, and maybe because he's flying now and because he's on the crest of a wave now, you know, get him involved now, you know, get him involved at the start of the season and then see where he is in January. And if he's starting to, you know, not get too many opportunities or he doesn't look ready by then, maybe look at a loan then.
Defo, yeah, that's equally as viable. Of course it is, yeah. Hope he's playing in the Shield. Hope he's going to get the chance to do that at least. And yeah, I think that's a great shout. You know, sometimes things, the thing with it is, with this season as well, it's coming up, it's going to be 2 games a week from the start to the finish for us, isn't it? And so you need your fresh legs. So you need games. If you go back to the derby at Anfield last season, and Jürgen says, I just had to change the team up because I've got to keep them fresh. And he was proved correct. So is Brewster in that position now where you say, well, you trust them against certain Premier League teams and you sort of, okay, we'll have to tweak our style if we're going to play with this lad up front. He's certainly going to be no Firmino. It's a completely different apple and orange type of scenario, that, isn't it? But there could be games where it suits, and there could be games where it's like, well, if teams are going to see possession so much, see so much ground, it could be the ideal, you know, extra person. Or alternatively, they try and play a high line, he can get in behind them. The tactical tweaks are all there. There's so many options available and so many games, and that's why I'm saying I'd be loath to loan him out and see him tearing it up for Sheffield or Aston Villa and scoring all these kinds of goals. And you think, well, we could have had 5 of them, and he could have turned a draw into a victory, or he could have got saved us from defeat in a game, being as that extra option off the bench, or indeed just giving the lads a midweek game off. You know, is he capable of playing a couple of Champions League teams if we get someone out of pot 4 who aren't quite up to it? I'd say still. So it's a good option, and it's just interesting. I think it does absolutely depends on what happens with the other alternatives we've got up front. Because if we don't move Origi and we don't move Shaqiri on, for whatever reason, good or bad, then who would you trust and who would you play? And then does it restrict his involvement? And that would be no good. There's no point in him sitting on the bench. Got to be playing. He's got to be on a pitch somewhere.
And Lizzie, you know, we have got the Community Shield coming up this weekend, and then there's the break straight away for international games and all that crap. And then we've actually got the real stuff again, Leeds United at home. I think what Damien just mentioned something interesting there in terms of how Jürgen in the past has shaken teams up. And particularly maybe at this point in the season where he may look to play players that are in form or who are fitter or who are fresher. Is there anything you think he might do with the team in the coming weeks that maybe might be a little bit of a wild card? Do you think maybe Minamino, for instance, looked sharp in that first pre-season friendly the other night against Stuttgart? You know, so as Neil has said on a number of shows, some nice turns. He's obsessed with his turns. but his turns aside, he did look fresh and he did look more involved and he did look more like a Liverpool player.
I think what it'll be will be your sort of standard first 11, but I think the interesting thing is who's first off the bench. I think that's what will be. I think that's one to look out for, because I think you're right, I did see Minamino and I was quite impressed with him. And I think even stuff like the photos that were coming out of the training camp where he just seemed to be involved and seemed to look like he was really enjoying himself. Like, I hope now that he's really getting bedded in with the team. He's someone I'd quite like to see. I think Damien's right. It's hard with the way that the transfer window in the season is. Like, the transfer window's open till October the 5th, but our season's starting on September the 12th. So there's quite a lot of time there where we're going to be playing, and probably if people are going to leave, people are going to come in. There's a lot of stuff happening in the background, which could be disruptive. I mean, if Divock Origi is making noises that he wants to go to Aston Villa, for example, he doesn't become like your first choice off the bench. That could be where Brewster comes in. I honestly don't really know is the answer. I think, like I say, you're going to get your first 11. I think, like, Keita will probably be more involved. I think we might even see Keita become a bit more of a first choice midfielder in terms of the three. But on the other ones with like Origi and Shaqiri, it's just going to be so interesting to see what happens with them and whether they're in our plans. Because if they're not in our plans, as much as people can say, you know, mock FSG, Klopp and FSG do replace bodies, so it'd be who will come in for them. I don't know. I just think it's so unpredictable.
One thing that's also unpredictable is, where is Messi going to go? Is it going to be Manchester City? Will he stay at Barcelona? Will he go to PSG? Even Milan's being mentioned. It's probably not going to be Merseyside, if we're all being honest, but you never know. Everton might go mad. So here is Rory Smith talking to Neil Atkinson about Messi. And then we have got an Arsenal fan talking about Arsenal, and when we will be back talking about the Charity Shield.
I'm joined by Rory Smith, and in front of your very eyes, or very ears more accurately, we're going to workshop his opinion on Messi for a piece of writing he is doing today. First of all, Rory, I mean, it's not good for the listeners, but you're in a lovely sunlit room, well in.
Yeah, no, it's just a kitchen, but it's surprisingly not raining in Yorkshire at the moment.
Is that a place you go to do all of your serious football thinking for the New York Times?
No, I mainly do my football thinking in the shower, is where I do most of my... Not that I have kind of a succession of showers through the day, but I tend to find that ideas come, or kind of I decide what I think in the shower, normally 24 hours after I publish something.
Well, in this instance, we're going to talk to you about it before you even start writing it. So, what do you think about Messi?
Well, I think that it's kind of an unimaginably big story, and I always struggle a bit on unimaginably big stories because some of it's obvious. It's obviously terrible for Barcelona. That's not like a particularly sophisticated, what's the word, like reflection on it. And equally, it's you kind of, everyone I think knows the background that they've been rubbish for 3 years, that they've obviously had the kind of succession of European humiliations, that they've wasted all this money, that they've kind of squandered his legacy. I've written all that stuff, and I don't think it adds a huge amount to the kind of general conversation that to write it again, because it's self-evident. You don't really need to have kind of any particular insight to say this has been a bad time for Barcelona. But equally, I don't really want to get involved with speculation of where he might go. There's plenty of that around as well. So it's
where would you like him to go?
What I'd like him to do is do something really romantic and kind of, to be honest, I'd either like him to take a massive pay cut and sign for Bayern Munich, because I think this is the closest I've got to an opinion on it. This is kind of a test of what's actually important to Messi. So he obviously wants to be involved with a sporting project that he feels can deliver in his final like 2-3 years, can deliver him not just domestic titles, just, if we're all honest, he could have won one of those at Barcelona anyway. Barcelona don't need to be particularly good to win La Liga, they just need to be a bit better than Real Madrid. And if Real Madrid get distracted by the Champions League, then Barcelona tend to kind of win it by default. I think there's a test for him in that if what he really wants is, if all that he wants is to win the Champions League, then you probably have to look around Europe and say, right, where are my best bets to win the Champions League? And there's probably four teams that would tick that box, which are Bayern, obviously European champions, PSG, European runners-up, Manchester City and Liverpool. They're the four that if you were to look at, you'd say those are the four best positioned to win the Champions League next season. I think that's probably fair. Real, probably fifth. They're Spanish champions. They're Real Madrid. You can't rule them out, but they feel a bit less advanced in their progression than those four teams. Of those four, it's interesting that two of them haven't even been mentioned in dispatches. It's quite intriguing that you see like Juventus mentioned, who can't afford Lionel Messi in the same way as Bayern Munich can't afford Lionel Messi. But there's still this kind of knee-jerk, oh, he could go to Juventus. And you think, well, why is there not a knee-jerk, he could go to Bayern Munich? And that interests me. But Liverpool and Bayern won't break their wage structures for him. So you kind of think, well, if he gets to leave on a free, could he not be like, I mean, he doesn't need money. He's got Lionel Messi, he's got enough money. Could he not be like, right, I say I want to sign for Bayern Munich. I want to win Champions League, I could sign for Bayern Munich.
So if I was in your shoes, where I think this is interesting is the hangers-on, is Team Messi, family, people who are close to him, because this is where the who does or doesn't need money for me comes into the arrangement.
That's true, yeah.
So if you are... Let's just use the €1 million a week figure. And I don't know about its veracity, but let's just say he earns €1 million a week. The person in his entourage who gets 4% of that has a clear agenda between continuing with €1 million a week and getting €250,000 a week.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And that's where I think this is all really interesting, is the idea that, you know, there's talk that Inter Milan have been wooing his family for years, and that there's all these different personal... It isn't just Messi in the way in which, for most footballers, it probably is broadly just them and an agent. You know, what's Ollie Watkins's concerns versus, you know, for Messi, it is like there is an enormous thing that goes around him.
He's an industry. Messi's an industry, and there will be. And you see it with all the, with like Neymar's the same. Neymar has like friends that he pays to kind of be around him, to keep him company, to make him happy, to kind of, which in one sense feels very kind of entourage-y and a bit kind of grim and cynical. But in another sense, it's really lovely that he's got these childhood friends that he's a bit like, right, look, you can come and share my wealth. That's a really nice thing. And it's funny, it's one of those tropes you only ever really get discussed with African players, who can quite often are kind of responsible for a community, almost. And I think Emmanuel Adebayor spoke about it really well, the money he earned was paying to kind of raise the standard of living, not just for him and his immediate family, but for kind of the extended family. And I think in Adebayor's case, at a certain point, that pressure got too much and it kind of broke. And I think there was some sort of fracture in his relationship with his family. Messi, I suspect, is the same, just as I think Ronaldo's probably the same and Neymar's the same. And to be honest, I suspect that's true, maybe not quite down to the Ollie Watkins level, but to quite a lot further than you'd think. I think the money kind of gets spread out with quite a lot of players because they feel a responsibility to kind of help others come with them, which is amazing and they should be praised for. But that I think is interesting, that it's being presented as a kind of Messi wants to win now, but his actual consideration is where can I win now? I want to win now, but also not take a massive financial hit, which is totally legitimate. No one wants to take a pay cut. No one volunteers to take a pay cut. But it's interesting that the two clubs that seem to be kind of most realistic destinations for him, City and PSG, are the ones who can not only kind of match the personal ambition level, but also the you maybe wouldn't have to lose out on too much money level. I think that's really interesting. Inter, I think, is a really interesting aspect of it as well, because Inter have basically spent the last, Messi's what, 32, probably 13 years positioning themselves as the kind of, well, if you wanted to leave, we're here for you, Leo, club. And it started with Massimo Moratti before he sold it. It was always his big dream to tempt Messi. And I do think it's interesting. You wonder how much... Like, Inter will have invested quite a lot of time in that relationship. And you wonder how much it works. But, and then the other aspect that I think is fascinating is, which I don't really want to write, because it seems it will be taken as a dig at various people. But it's interesting that everyone has a project until they decide they don't want to have a project anymore. I think that's really fascinating. Go on.
Well, that's my thing on the so you mentioned time there. The one thing that I think for Liverpool and Bayern Munich and for a couple of other clubs who are sort of, it was super clubs, but who aren't involved in this really, or you think they won't be, there's a little thing here where what this suddenly does is, it's a difficult summer anyway. Everybody's got the plans. Everybody's got what they're trying to achieve. Oh my God, here's this big shiny thing.
Yeah.
And that's part of the project thing as well, that everyone's, insofar as it can be done in this window, everyone's got their pathway. Chelsea's quite clearly, this is the opportunity where we go big and we sign a lot of good footballers, with the exception of Thiago Silva, under the age of 25, and we get stocked for the next 3 or 4 years. Everyone's got that. But even Chelsea, somewhere, someone will have had to have a messy meeting, at least one.
Yeah.
And I think that this is one of the big things that now happens to a lot of clubs in Europe, a lot of the top 10, top 9, I think it is, because Arsenal are probably 10th in terms of size of wage bill, so top 9. They will have suddenly now got completely distracted from whatever the actual business was because there's this messy thing.
Yeah, and that's really interesting that you like you say, Chelsea will have had to have a meeting. And it's interesting, actually, that Kai Havertz has kind of slowed down just a little bit, just as it looks as though it might be announced. And you do wonder whether that's partly because Chelsea are thinking, right, hang on, let's just, not necessarily we're going to sign Messi, but let's just see how this plays out. Let's see what happens. And the thing is, there is the other big kind of complication, which is that if Barcelona don't agree on his interpretation of the clause that allows him to leave for free, you could potentially do a deal with Messi and either leave yourself exposed to paying his buyout, which I don't think any club would do,
yeah,
or you have to wait until the end of the legal process. And that potentially is really disruptive. But you're right, I think Chelsea will have sat down Marina Granovskaya and Petr Cech and Lampard and, you know, whichever emissaries of Abramovic are kind of most involved in that process and thought and done the numbers. I'd be surprised if Liverpool haven't at least kind of taken a few minutes over a cup of coffee to think, right, actually, what would that look like? I'd be really surprised, just because you have to not only think about the impact of, right, well, actually, this is something that we thought would never happen. Is it feasible? And for most clubs, it'll be like, well, no, it's not. We can't do that. And we need him to kind of take a 90% pay cut and we can afford him. He's not going to do that. Let's move on. But I think the consequences of what happens are probably quite significant as well. You need to kind of...
Yeah, game that in.
Yeah, like war game, kind of, right, he does this, what happens there? Because, you know, even if City sign him, which I think is the most likely outcome, I'd say kind of... City and Barcelona are his most likely locations next season, with PSG kind of third and maybe into fourth. Maybe that might flip around. But you know, City signing, there will have to be some sort of consequence to City's squad, because for all that FFP has been kind of losing this summer, for all that City, the message of FFP the last few years has been kind of, all right, maybe don't take it that seriously, lads, it's all right. You don't know if you bring on someone who's earning €1 million a week, maybe more, depending on how you factor stuff in, then you don't have to balance the books a little bit. You can't just chuck that amount of money at somebody. And also, you know, it should kind of change who plays and the way you play. And I also think there's an interesting, this isn't the piece for today because he's not signed for them, but there is an interesting element of, if he signs for City, what does it say about Guardiola?
Yeah.
I thought there was, in Calvin Alma-Barrett does that really, really admirable interview every year with City's in-house TV station. Be better if he did it with kind of not a controlled media outlet, but still, it's good that he does it. Most CEOs don't do that, so he deserves credit for it. In which he said that they're prepared to change the age profile of players they normally sign. This was before the Messi thing happened, and that in itself was really interesting, because that's very kind of Man United signed Robin van Persie. It's very, right, next year, the project goes out the window, the philosophy goes out the window, we don't care, let's go and sign Koulibaly, let's go and sign X, let's go and sign Y, let's spend as much money as we can, let's just win the Champions League. And then you go and sign Messi, and it does kind of say, actually, you know what, we couldn't, the way we wanted to do it couldn't quite get us over the line, so we're gonna, it feels a little bit like cheating, but at a computer game. Not proper cheating, but it feels a little bit like cheating at a computer game. It feels a bit like creating your own player who's got 99 speed.
Last little thing is the knock-on effect. So for me, one of the things that strikes me about whatever Messi does next, when you talk about gaming it out, is there's huge, I think, knock-on effect. I want to point people in the direction of, but do not engage with or follow a Twitter account called We Are Messi, which has over 500,000 followers because Messi is supported like a football team. And I'm not saying that I don't want anybody to be mean to this, to whatever conglomerate of people look after We Are Messi. That's not what I'm asking for. Do not do that. Leave them alone. Just look at it and see that I'm right, that they've got over 500,000 followers. And if it's Manchester City, and Manchester City do win the Champions League with him, it feels a bit like FC Messi have won the Champions League. And then there's the thing that bringing Messi in, even if you get him to take a 50% pay cut, he's on 500 grand a week. There's what he then does to your wage structure over 2 years that people will say, well, I know I'm not Messi, but I'm Messi minus 5%.
Yeah.
And that what that the knock-on effect and the ramifications of that for a lot, for any club who get him, I think are absolutely huge. It's only really, I would say, the established European giants whose shoulders would be broad enough, or who have a manager, for instance, like Klopp, with that size of personality, who would be able to stop the FC Messi process going. And is that actually counterproductive to what Messi wants? Which is where you get the impression he quite like to go to a gaff, be the best player, obviously, which he would be, but also just be part of a gang of lads that win all the trophies, please.
See, Neil, you've done it at the end, haven't you? What you've done is you've, with your final thoughts, with your Jerry Springer-style final thoughts, you've actually given me, yeah, that's right. Wherever he goes, because I don't agree with you, I think that wherever he went, if it was to Liverpool with Klopp, to City with Guardiola, to PSG with, not so much with Tuchel, but with Neymar and Mbappe, to Inter with Conte, who's as strong a, Conte's a brilliant manager, he's a world-class manager, and he's as strong a character as there is in football. Wherever he goes, to Real Madrid with Zinedine Zidane, it would be Messi. It would be about Messi. Everything would be about Messi. The game plan would be give the ball to Messi. The kind of the structure would be changed for Messi. Be easier at certain teams than others. Like at City, he would kind of have a. It's easy to see him taking the ball off Kevin De Bruyne and then slipping it through for Sergio Aguero than it is to see him, I don't know, getting the ball off Nemanja Matic and giving it to Anthony Martial, or getting the ball off Marcelo Brozovic and giving it to Lukaku, who's a player I really like. But, it feels like, I think there's an element, as well, that I was thinking this last night. Sorry, I'm now rambling. This is literally my process. This is how the sausage is made. There would be a theory that Messi has to leave Barcelona, because Barcelona are a mess. And if he signed for Manchester United, people would be like, well, this is, his chance of winning the Champions League. But as things stand, Barcelona with Messi in the team have a much better chance of winning the Champions League than Manchester United with Messi in the team.
Yep.
And we sometimes allow momentum to fool ourselves into thinking that the team that's rising is better than the team that's dropping, even though the team that's dropping hasn't dropped nearly as far as the team that's rising has reached. And I think that's interesting. But back to your point, wherever he goes, he will still, to some extent, have the same problem that he's got at Barcelona, which is that what they call Messi dependencia, this sense that you rely on Messi, that you look to Messi, that he has to solve the problems. That's true whichever team he plays for. It's true at PSG, it's true at Man City. It might be easier for him a bit at Man City, but it would still be a thing. It would still be relevant because he's Messi. He can't escape himself. And I think that's quite an interesting dynamic. You might have made my morning a lot easier. Thank you very much.
Excellent stuff. How the sausage is made, Leo Messi, and the tragedy of being locked with who you actually are. See you later.
It's time for the weekend endorsement that is the closest to my heart. It's Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap talking to you about Beer 52. And as I've said in the past when chatting to John, I am a legitimate Beer 52 customer. They don't send us it free anymore. But if they did, I'd be quite happy to sort of sustain as a customer. So I get it once a month. I get 10, not 8. But right now they're offering 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free. So if you go to beer52.com/rap, it's for $5.95 for the postage is all you've got to cover. You'll get 8 for nothing to try it out. And there's one of these every month, and it always is a different theme. And sometimes those themes are geographical, sometimes the time of year. At the minute, it's obviously coming towards the end of the summer, so that'll be in there as well. But it comes from all over the globe. I mean, recently there's been New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, USA and Europe. They're pretty strong. That'd be my one thing I'd say. They are pretty strong, but they are also an independent British company, and you can drink them at your level. leisure, what I like to do is have them alongside all the sort of more conventional stuff, and you do taste the difference. And as I say, I literally do pay the money for this because I enjoy it so very much. So, you know, if dark beer is not your thing, you can choose the light option, and also you get with it a magazine called Ferment, and a tasty little bit of a snack in a packet of some description, something salted. If you change your mind after you've signed up, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. So it's beer52.com/wrap. beer52.com/wrap. That gets you £8.45.95. And it is something which, as I say, I think it is for everyone. This isn't something which should be gendered or thought of such in that way. Brock will get stuck in as well. And we enjoy them a great deal. Thank you very much for this. Thank you to Beer52 for the support. Take it easy. It's Neil Atkinson with Jordan Jarrett-Bryan to talk about Arsenal. And in this weird transfer market window situation, Jordan, where no one's busy, even though everybody makes noises like they're busy, where no one's busy, Arsenal have at least been mildly busy, brought in a very highly rated central defender, brought in an experienced player in Willian, albeit on a slightly longer contract than some people might expect. But I know when I saw the centre-half be confirmed, I thought that's one for Jordan Jarrett-Bryan.
Good afternoon. Yes, you are correct. I have been banging on for a while about the need to address our defence and better get better defenders. And we seem to be doing that, Neil. We seem to be doing that. Now, what I won't do, I won't be one of those football fans that gets excited about any kind of signing. I haven't seen this guy play, Gabriel. Yeah. So I'm not going to lie and pretend like we've just signed, you know, bloody Maldini in his pom. I don't know much about this guy beyond what I've read and clips that I've seen. He looks good, but everybody looks good in a compilation clip.
They do. You know what I mean? You should see mine. Look phenomenal.
I won't go that far, no. Easy. So I'm not going to pretend like this is a signing that's going to... What I can't do is say, because of these two signings, Saliba and Gabriel, we can come top four now. Because I just don't know these guys. I won't pretend to know them. But what I will say is, A, from what I have seen of them, they do look good. In particular, Saliba. I'm really excited about him. Secondly, the trusted sources, if you like, that I have that do know more about them than I do, who would be honest with me and say, Jordan, you've signed a dud there. They've said to me, look, these are two good centre-backs that you've signed. Young, raw, will make mistakes, but you've got two guys that if you get it right in the next 5 years, they could be in the top 10 centre-backs in Europe. Mm. I'll take that. And the emphasis on buying three defenders, and I will, in fact, it's four, because we include Mari, whose deal was confirmed as a long-term one, and Suarez as well. I can't remember the last time Arsenal signed four defenders in one window, if at all. So the fact that they've kind of identified that this is an area we need to strengthen and improve on. I mean, it's 15 years, Neil. It's 15 years since we've had a defence that I feel like going into games, we can keep a clean sheet here. Mm. Gives me some confidence, if only for the fact that they're addressing it at least. I can't derive confidence on how good they will be. If we sign Virgil van Dijk from Liverpool, I could be with confidence say, yeah, I know what I'm getting. We're in the money here. I can't say that here. So it's encouraging. Let's see.
I'll take a bit of bedding in as well, and I think that there's been a bit more disruption around Arsenal than people think. For instance, Ceballos isn't back yet. If he does come back at all, that still remains to be up in the air. So he was very important as the side sort of resurged towards the end of last season. I thought he looked as though he was important both on and off the pitch, Jordan. It looked like he was an important part of that side. There's the injuries that have been present for a while for a few different players. You mentioned Mari there. He's one. Martinelli is still... still out long term, it looks like, for him. So he's, you know, but also on top of all of that, all of these managers, including the Liverpool manager, but at least the Liverpool manager isn't discussing sort of two new central defenders to drop into a side. You know, he hasn't had that long to work with them. And we play this charity shield, everyone goes off on international duty. So he won't get much time then either. It will take that sort of month of September, won't it, for all players, all new signings. And as I say, there haven't been that many yet, but to get bedded into the relevant clubs.
Yeah, for sure. I think that with the time frame that's available and the signings that have been made, the turnaround to kind of hit the ground running is going to definitely be, it's going to be tricky. It's going to be short. It's a very short window to get up to speed. And you'd like to think that Arteta, from what I see and hear about him, is that he's very intense and he will have spent every day, as I'm sure top managers do, on the phone to talking to guys about, yeah, I want this from you. These are the, and I'm talking like the intricacies of, I want this amount of distance between you and the centre back when the ball is there. Yeah. I want you, your body shape to be like this when your defender or your attacker is here. I'm really hoping that he's having those sorts of, that sort of impact on the players that are coming in and everybody from the get-go, not just on the training field where it's going to be much more of a team-shaped thing. I really hope he's getting into those new signings in particular and letting them know the standard of what's required. As I've been bleating on for ages on your channel, Neil, I want the main thing for me, and I'm sure we'll get to it in a minute, I want to see the season from Arsenal. If nothing else, Neil, just be hard to beat. Be hard to beat. And I think that looks like clean sheets. That looks like reducing the amount of chances that opposition teams get against us. There's so many crimes against Arsenal and their failings over the last few years. But for me, the biggest one, we're just easy to play against. We're too easy to play against. And your mob know that more than anybody else. Just you play Arsenal, you know you're going to get 5, 6, 7, 8 goal-scoring chances. That's too many. If we can reduce teams, and I'm talking from the bottom of the league to Liverpool, if we can reduce teams to having 2 to 3 maximum good goal-scoring chances a game, I'll take that. Just be hard to beat. I don't mind being boring. I don't mind winning games 1-0. I don't mind if it means we have less chances up front. The main thing I'm looking for from Arteta and these new signings in particular, just make teams work for goals, please.
Well, you didn't have to last time you played Liverpool, it's fair to say, from an Arsenal point of view at the Emirates. Arsenal didn't have to work for those goals. This game at the weekend, as I said before, it's not quite clear what team he'll pick. And I think also, I'm always intrigued as how seriously any side takes the Community Shield. I think if there's one that will be taken the least seriously for the last sort of 5 or 10 years, it may well be this one for a variety of different reasons. Yeah. Here. So I think no matter what the result is, it will feel a bit more like a glorified friendly. I'd expect both managers to use all 5 subs. For instance, there'll be no one trying to have it replicate a normal game with the internationals straight afterwards. But there is a thing there where Arsenal will want to put a performance in the play ever so well at Wembley. And there will be an eagerness, won't there, from everyone on the pitch to bed in and get something.
Well, the first thing, Neil, is the game shouldn't be happening. If there's 1 year to scrap this game, it's this year. You know what I mean? Just give everybody the window, as I mentioned, for the new season, as tight as it is. There's no fans in the ground. Just scrap it this year. I don't think Liverpool fans or Liverpool or Arsenal, I don't think anybody's going to be like, no, let's do it. It's like, I think we'd all be like, yeah, okay, fair enough. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to happen, yep, but it is happening. So I agree. I think both managers will use their full squads. What I'm looking for is to get glimpses of what our first team will look like and can do. So while there's a lot of talk about Eze Maitland-Niles going out to Wolves or to Spurs even, and a lot of fans are like, no, we need to keep him. He's a good, worst case, good squad player. I don't disagree with that. But my priority at the moment is, and you can talk to this a little bit as well, the last few years, just get your first 11 right first. Just give me an 11 first of all. And if the bench is weak, if the bench is lame, we can address that in the next 2 years. First and foremost, just let me see what the 8 out of our 11 is going to be going forward. Just give me a skeleton idea. And I think that this just Charity Shield, what I'm looking for is to see, get an idea. And it won't be for the 90 minutes. It might even be for a whole half. But just give me a period whereby I can imagine what our 11 is going to look like going forward. And you'll make changes in subs, and so they should. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what Arsenal's 11 is going to be like. Just give me a strong 11 and we can worry about having a strong bench, a strong squad over the coming weeks, months and couple of years. And I really hope that's what Arteta does. I really hope he uses this chance to give me what's our back four going to be like. I don't want mixes and matches. What is our back five, including our keeper, going to be this season? Mm-hmm. And I really hope that's something that I can take away from this particular game. I think the result is more important for us than it is for you, even though I don't think it's important for either side. But I think we need to get off to a good start, only because I think that you've got a tough start to the season as well with Leeds and a few games coming up as well. But I would like there just to be a result in the back pocket off the back of a good performance. And you know what? And I want a good performance, but I want to see patterns of play and patterns of combinations that give me encouragement going forward. I don't want 90 minutes of brilliant play. I don't really care if there's not a clean sheet in this game, but just give me 20-minute phases where I can see where we're going and what we're doing.
Okay, nice one to Jordan there and Neil, talking about the Charity Shield this weekend. So we've got it on Saturday, Ian. Are you excited about the Charity Shield? How do you feel about it? It's a weird one, isn't it? It's kind of like, It's semi-important if you win it, and if you lose it, no one's asked.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a fair way to put it, Robbo. I think I am excited about it because, it normally signals the start of the season. You've obviously mentioned there earlier on the show that we've then got this weird international break for 2 weeks, which does put a little bit of a damper on it because normally you're almost straight in, aren't you, after the Charity Shield. But yeah, I'm absolutely excited to get the game underway and stuff, and I think it'll be a really good benchmark, I think, for both sides to see where they're up to. As I say, I've not really seen much from other teams in terms of pre-season, but I'm guessing Liverpool are probably one of the more advanced in terms of prep and stuff. And I think what you've seen from the manager in terms of the first two games, the first 11 that probably starts the season are the ones who've been starting up the pre-season games, certainly first half. Obviously, there's a couple of maybe tweaks there that could happen before Leeds if Trent suddenly finds himself back to full fitness. He'll obviously come in and stuff. But apart from that, it's not too far away, is it, from what you'd expect to see at the start of 11 come Leeds on the 12th, if that's when the game takes place. I don't think the TV companies have decided which games are happening when yet. But I think Henderson's another one who's probably going to start his pre-season, if you like, after the Arsenal game in terms of training. So there's loads of intrigue to this. I think Liverpool will go strong. I think the manager's already said that you can expect more players to maybe get a little bit longer than what they've been getting in the first couple of games, just as they start to prepare for, obviously, the start of the season. And then they're going to go away and obviously do bits with international teams as well. So they're going to get more fitness. But I think the manager will want them under his control. He'll want to dictate what that looks like before they head away. So, yeah, I think there's loads in it, to be honest. I think, you know, the lads will take it seriously. I know Jürgen said, you know, it's not necessarily about the trophy or winning it, anything like that. And I know Man City always claim it to be a trophy. We know it's not that. But it's still nice to win. It's still nice to get that victory going into the new season. It's nice to put a little marker down. I've always thought that. And I think, you know, it does confidence no harm at all. So, yeah, I think, to be fair, under Arteta, I think Arsenal are starting to make slight improvements. So that you can see in the style of play that they're a much more cohesive unit than maybe what they were previously. But I don't think he'll have had loads and loads of time to work with them. I know he's added a couple to the squad as well. I think Williams come in, who's a good player, to be fair, but a bit of a mad one, given a 32, 33-year-old, a three-year contract. So I can see why they've wanted experience in the squad, but I'm not sure it was the right move personally. And I know they're trying to strengthen at the back as well. So I think there's a lad in France, Gabriel, who they're trying to get over the line and stuff, but I'm not sure it'll be in time for the match. So yeah, I think it'll be a good one, Robbo, but, you know, sitting here right now, you'd have to fancy the Reds.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kevin, it is a weird one, isn't it? I mean, like, and I keep using the word weird all the time when we're doing stuff at the moment, because everything is still weird. I mean, there is a sort of semblance of normality, but then you know you think about this game being played at Wembley but with no fans. Like, you know, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've had a long way for these days, haven't we, where you can go to Wembley and not really care about the result, but just have a good day with your mates. And I feel like we're missing out on that. Obviously, I missed it last season, but it looked like, you know, Liverpool lost, but everyone had a ball, didn't they? And I think it's a shame that we, you know, the only time we've ever been in this is when we've won the FA Cup, or last season when obviously City won both the title and the FA Cup. So I think it's a shame that it's not going to be played out in front of fans, and, you know, that feels like a way off, doesn't it? You know, might be looking at next year before, you know, stadiums are packed out. So the sooner that comes, the better, obviously. But I think it's going to be an interesting game. I've got a feeling Klopp will want to get a look at, like Lizzie and Ian have sort of said, that his main 11. But I've got a sneaky feeling for maybe like Tsimikas to get a closer look at what he can do against sort of Premier League competition. Maybe then he could always bring on Andy Robertson, couldn't he, after that, if he's, you know, give him a first half. I think Minamino, as you've mentioned before, I think this will be, you know, a massive season for him now, because he looks like he has, like Lizzie said, in all the pictures you're seeing of him in that game, as Neil mentioned in his turns, like he looks so good and he looks happy as well. And like he started to sort of make mates in the squad, where I feel like that was so hard for him. He come in and then it was like March shut down for months, and he, you know, he would have just been sort of thinking, this is going to be the best 6 months of my life. You know, I'm coming in and Liverpool are pretty nailed on to win the title. It's going to be, you know, I'm going to get minutes and stuff because they've wrapped it up early. And then it just didn't turn out that way, did it? So seeing him the other day, I think, you know, maybe does he put him in, and then, you know, players like Kater, it'll be important for them, as Lizzie mentioned him before, because, you know, it is such a long way off then to the Leeds game. So it is Klopp's sort of final chance to get a real look at these players, because he's only had two chances to do so, hasn't he? Obviously, they've had that long training camp in Austria, but I think competitively, we learned a lot last season from the game against Man City. And without that game, I don't think, I'm not sure, I mean, it might be a big thing to say, but I'm not sure Liverpool go on and win the title without knowing sort of what they found out from that game. That first half, they didn't play well. The half-time sort of talk, which, you know, we saw last season happen a lot in crucial games. Liverpool come out a different team, which you expect after a poor first half. But I just think they found out a lot about Man City, and that they could go toe-to-toe with them and even not, you know, go be better than them. And so, I mean, we're probably not going to learn that of Arsenal, because I still don't see them anywhere near as good as Liverpool. But, you know, he'll find a lot else about his players.
Absolutely. And Damien, I'm going to do it again, mate. You're the old school red on the call.
Indeed, yeah, mate. Yeah.
The charity shield, or the community shield, as we're meant to call it these days. Well, what does it mean, if anything, to you?
Well, going back to a bit, like Bob Paisley always said, it's not winning the charity shield that counts qualifying for it. So I'm hugely excited about it. I'm made up to win in it, because you've got to do something significant to get there. And obviously, that's changed since those old days because of the prestige of the FA Cup. But certainly, rocking up there as champions of Europe, and given Man City are going over in the second half of the game, it's great. It's a real positive opportunity for Liverpool. If you want to call setting a marker down, it's just to remind everybody, here we are, just battered Arsenal and won this shield. Alternatively, if you lose, it's like, well, it's not really a trophy, is it? So it's an absolute free hit, this one. I'm really looking forward to it. It is unusual. You know, it is a mad one. You're quite right to say that, because everything is, we've had such little preparation. But if you look at our preparation, we're ahead of Arsenal. And Jürgen loves having his players, doesn't he? So it's one of those things where, and it's obviously it's a bit too early, and obviously it's the wrong side of an international break, and there's no fans at Wembley and all that. There's all these negative things, but all we can deal with at the moment is we've qualified for this prestigious thing, and I'd like us to win it, and I'd like us to give Arsenal a bit of a kick in at it, you know what I mean? I'd like us to come out the blocks and play well, and I've encouraged that the Liverpool have started what is a very recognisable, strongest 11 in each of the games, and I think they're going to do the same again, because they have got to get the fitness of these players up, and if we turn it on, great. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and it's always, you know, certainly thinking back to when I was younger, a number of times you see all those iconic Liverpool players and legends lifting that shield up. It is part of our story. And, you know, there's other teams who have won it more than us, and other teams who put more emphasis on it. But let's be there every year. Let's be in that shield again next year. That's the big thing. And this is the first step on attacking this season. And let's start it off on a big positive one. You know, hopefully the sun's shining and we've got this shield and we've played well. Great, you know, let's frighten everybody.
Is right, and Lizzie, you know, a few Evertonians seem to get wound up that you know, some of the players were on the Anfield pitch with the trophies, including the European Cup, before it was obviously won the other week by Bayern Munich. I was fine with it personally, but I'd like us to go a step further and actually put everything on the pitch. So, like, if you win the Charity Shield, Community Shield, I want them to put that on the pitch, and the league on the pitch, and the World Club Cup, and all the Managers of the Month awards, and all the play, and everything. Like, I remember seeing, you know, Cav mentions Paisley there. There's a picture kicking around the Paisley where they did something like that. And it was just like half the pitch was covered in all of these awards, and there was bottles of whiskey and all kinds of stuff on there. And it was great, because obviously, you know, all this is laid out, and then Bob Paisley's just there with a face that was like, I'm what? This is just what I do, mate. Just in me slippers, aren't I? Winning European Cups.
Winners, you know, winning breeds winning at the end of the day. And I think, like, this team wants to win no matter what it is, whether it's a friendly, whether it's a Community Shield, whether it's a league. I think this team doesn't do well losing. I think, like, as much as they might have been bladdered playing Man City and they getting beat, you know, 4-0, they were really pissed off, weren't they? They were really annoyed with themselves, and they'll want to go out and win this game, and too right that they should. Like, it'd be nice to kickstart the season with it, wouldn't it? I mean, we're not going to lose sleep over it. I do think the Community Shield is, like, a really good thing to be in, but more so this year, because let's go back to the word weird, with how weird it is, with the whole situation around COVID, no fans, the short break in between the seasons. You know, no one's going to have, only two teams in the Premier League are going to have a competitive pre-season game, and that will be Liverpool and Arsenal, because there's something to play for. Like, that will be a fairly intense pre-season game, and it is an awful good way to, you know, get your feet on the ground and start your season there, because most people are playing, like, little pre-season friendlies. I mean, Brighton is supposedly playing Chelsea, but now they're having a coronavirus thing where potentially they're quarantining, so they don't know if they're going to play. Like, use this opportunity as a way to get competitive minutes under your belt, because there is a difference of playing, you know, Stuttgart on a rainy, boggy pitch in Austria to playing Arsenal, who'll be going for it, in Wembley. Like, I think we can't take that for granted. It's yet another edge for Liverpool. Like, we all talk about edges that we try and get each season. Let's start it now, and let's use this as an opportunity to really get going and play the team that you'd want to see against Leeds and get them the match fitness as such started now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I noticed when we were playing Stuttgart that at half time, or when they come out for the second half, one of their players was doing keepy ups with his chewy, and then he kicked it up and caught it in his mouth, and I kind of thought, like, you wouldn't do that if it was a serious game, would you, lad? Do you know what I mean? It was a bit like, you know what I mean? It just said to me that it's a friend. It was a good trick, by the way. I was trying to find the video of it, but I don't think we're going to see that from Arsenal. I think that's well said, Lizzie, in that it's going to be a competitive game. It's one we can tune into. It's one we can watch. It's one we can support the Reds to win. And hopefully then we are ready for Leeds, which Jürgen Klopp has already said is the main thing, because we're going to attack this title. We're going to go for it again. We want number 20. We want to get on the same as the Manx, and then we want to surpass them as well. So let's get ready for a new season, Reds. That has been the Weekender up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.